no reprisals. The Breams are free of you forever.
You hurt my feelings, my dear Rourke. I know the rules. Even my worst detractors must admit that the devil is a damn good sport. Thanks for the game, Rourke. We will play again. We have all eternity before us.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pod Stallions, the podcast for the website PladStallions.com, but you already knew that. I am Brian, and with me as always is Jason, way, way over there.
Way over here. Hi everybody, can you see me? I'm waving. Hi.
First off, I just want to say sorry about the loss of the ending of the SCTV episode. It was a miracle I got any of that done. Because of the technical issues. I'm hoping not to have those today. We're going to jump right into the show right now. And our topic today is Roderick Andrew Anthony Jude McDowell. As
nice.
You or any 70s kid would better know him as Roddy McDowell.
Yes, sir.
A true icon of our childhood. Most of our gateway to him would be in the Planet of the Apes films, where he played Cornelius, Caesar, and then Galen.
Yes.
In the subsequent TV series. Really don't want to dwell on that too much because the guy had a heck of a career and nobody really talks about him enough.
I agree, and I'm just going to jump on that and jump in right away so we can get it out of the way. Roddy McDowell was one of those guys for me as a kid that was kind of like, you know how we'd see certain things, or you know Tron would come out, and then I'd kind of be aware of who Bruce Boxleitner was, you know, or whatever.
Boy doesn't forget when he's aware of Bruce Boxleitner.
Well, but you know what I'm saying? Like all of a sudden, Bring Him Back Alive comes on, and I got to watch it every week.
He was definitely, like, along with Lee Majors and certain people and William Shatner, that, hey, I know that guy early on in your life.
Like, you know, we always talk about Sam Jones being in some Code Red or whatever it was. Oh, Melody Anderson was in that show with, well, she was in Manimal, I think, right?
You're right, yeah.
She was in Manimal. And then Kirstie Alley was in a show with Rod Taylor. And I knew Rod Taylor from The Birds and from The Time Machine. And he was the elder dude on this spy sort of show.
Masquerade.
And Kirstie Alley got it after Wrath of Khan, but before Cheers. And so these things started to happen where, as kids, we become little mini, you know, IMDBs, and we sort of pay attention to what these people are doing. So Roddy McDowell came into my universe, I think, as most people's, with Cornelius, with Planet of the Apes, and the other characters he played in those movies. And you know, I was semi-obsessed with those movies as a kid. I think most kids were, and our generation and everything. And that sort of became the gateway to pay attention to whatever he was doing, whether if it was, you know, I heard his voice or he had a supporting role or whatever. I just was highly aware of everything he did because of Planet of the Apes, before and after. That was the gateway for me.
And that's really funny because, you know, Planet of the Apes, he was 40.
Yeah, that's right.
He was a kid actor. He had been acting for 28 years by that point.
That's right. And so, the first big thing, what was the horse movie?
I think his first big thing
wasn't it.
How Green Was My Valley? I want to say, and no question. I mean, he did a lot of stuff, but no.
Well, what was the horse movie?
My Friend Flicka.
Flicka, it was Flicka.
And he, of course, did Lassie Come Home.
That's right. He did Lassie one too.
And Lassie Come Home is famous because he did it with another child actress, Liz Taylor.
Ooh, nothing came of her.
Nothing came of her, and they were never friends again.
Nope, never.
Never.
They always said that he had all the secrets. He knew everything about everyone, and he kept his mouth shut until the day he died.
And you know,
Roddy McDowell? Yeah. Roddy McDowell was tight with, he knew Montgomery Clift, he was tight with Liz, all these people, and they said that he was the guy that if he wanted to write a tell-all, it would have been, you know, the size of a phone book.
Yeah.
But he was loyal to his friends, and he kept his mouth shut his whole life. He never... They said that was one of his you know best traits was that he never shared any of those secrets or information with anyone. He was
well,
very
you never
very
really
loyal.
Hear bastard said about him. That's for sure.
No, you don't. But let's kick it off. Yeah.
The beautiful thing about McDowell is, and this is you know this is bigger now. You don't. He was a superstar. He was in everything, like Vincent Price or you know these actors who they'd never turned work down. Back in the day, and that's led to an incredible career. And I have a secret weapon. Okay. I did not research this episode because
me either.
Well, because one, I'm a huge fan, so this isn't that hard.
Right.
But also because, and this is forgotten by most, I used to work for Topless Robot for the Village Voice Media.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
I used to write articles for them, and they would daily top 10 lists, and they paid me money, and I liked it.
They were the king of top 10 lists.
One of my favorite was called The 12 Greatest Nerd Roles of Roddy McDowell Other Than Planet of the Apes.
Nice.
And you know what? There's some things you just have a lot of fun with. And
sure.
Being a huge fan of the guy, I thought I'd just go through some of my favorite roles that are in this list. And then we can kind of, spitball around some of the forgotten things he's done. Now, the first thing I want to point out is, after Planet of the Apes, he kind of became Mr. Sci-Fi.
He did. And before you even get into the list, let's do this. Because I am nothing if not painfully honest on this show. Because if I say something wrong or get a memory wrong, it makes me crazy that I might have taken credit for it. Or didn't. So let's do this. When you do your lists, I will be perfectly honest of whether that was in my brain to talk about or if it was, oh, shit, I forgot about that.
Sure.
And we'll see how in sync your 10 would be with mine if I were to do such a
thing. Yeah, now, these are mainly nerd ones. So I'm not going to mention his awesome turn on Columbo, which is one of my favorite Columbos, where he has that breakdown in the the ski car or the cable
who
car.
Who didn't do Columbo?
I think you were court ordered to.
But you would have his Twilight Zone on there.
I would, yeah. The people are the same everywhere. Is that what it's called?
People are like,
That's it.
Things are tough all over by Jackson.
That's a beautiful one that I got to show my daughter because I found all the Twilight Zones on our on demand system, and she's a huge fan of Goosebumps. So,
nice. Yeah. Well, she would dig it then.
She did. I tried to show her the one with the mannequins the other day, and she's like, "You were scared of this as a kid." And it was terrifying.
Absolutely. We just made a little action figure of her.
Oh yeah, that's right. You did, Marcia.
And Francis. Yeah.
Number 12 would be I'm not going to do the number 12, but one of my favorite roles he did after Planet of the Apes was a pretty much forgotten show called Fantastic Journey.
Yes.
And he was injected. Fantastic Journey was kind of like Sliders, but it never stopped. Like, it would drop a cast member, put a new cast member in, and this was one of like I think three or four incidences where Roddy McDowell is saddled with, those Westworld type androids on television. And Fantastic Journey was a precursor to like Logan's Run. They filmed in some of the same locations a year
later.
And
who was the guy whose name I always
Jared
forget?
Martin?
Jared Martin. And talk about a face that was everywhere.
And then there was another, the other lead was a young black guy who's now a pretty prominent director in
Carl Franklin.
Yeah
he did One False Move. I think that was his first movie.
Ike Eisman
Ike Eisenman, yeah, who was Scotty's nephew, right?
Scotty's nephew. And Katie Saylor, who was...
Hello, Saylor.
A lot of guys fell in love with her, and she left the show for unknown reasons and was never seen again.
Really?
Yeah. She was a half, alien Atlantean character on the show. Like, there are people going through shifts in time. I think McDowell was added in the second or third episode. He was initially kind of a scoundrel character, and then they kind of rewrote him as more of the moral voice.
It's actually a pretty – it's a pretty cool show.
It's a great show, cool, a great concept. Premise. And, if you know, it was written by DC Fontana a lot, and it had a lot of industry veterans in it, like John Saxon, of course, got his court ordered.
John Saxon, another guy that was everywhere.
Yeah.
But they used to do like a recap, right, at the beginning of the episodes kind of to recap where we were at.
No, sort of. No, the whole concept was narrated by the guy who did Race Bannon's voice, you know, and it would explain the concept of the show,
right?
And then they would, you know, it was formulaic in the sense that they had they would walk into a portal and solve a problem by the end of the portal,
right?
But there was some interesting concepts, and I felt like it was kind of like half baked bread that would have probably tasted really good if it had a whole season to figure itself out.
Yeah, and it probably was also, you know, stuck with the budget that it had, and probably it was a more ambitious idea than the budget, you know, might have allowed.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things. Is I binge watched the entire series a few years ago, and you really start to notice the things that people without VCRs wouldn't like. Hey, they used that set 2 weeks ago. And, hey, that's the costumes from Gene Roddenberry's Planet Earth pilot.
And hey, the opening credits are taking 15 minutes.
Yes, yes, yes. And hey, what happened to the girl that was on the show? Because they wrote her off, like, they left with her at one episode, and then the next episode they went, oh, it's good that she stayed with those people.
And you're what's like, her problem? Why'd she split, man?
Apparently
what's...
illness.
Was it an illness?
Yeah, it's like there's like eight guys who remember Fantastic Journey. I think there's one website. So
convention, yeah. The Fantastic Journey convention every year. Yeah, eight guys.
The dance basement. Is really depressing. But
I heard she left because Gerard Martin was all hands.
I don't know about that.
And him and Ike Eisenberg.
I really like Gerard Martin. And speaking of Gerard Martin, he's in the next thing. With Roddy McDowell.
Of course.
The Martian Chronicles.
They were a package deal in the 70s. You couldn't get one without the other.
Yeah, well, the Martian Chronicles, six-hour miniseries. And
now that wouldn't have been on my list. I would have had to be reminded that that McDowell was in that, too.
Yeah, he was a priest in that.
That's right, and Darren McGavin was in that.
Darren McGavin's great as an obnoxious character. I can't remember his name. Barry Morse is in it.
Martian Chronicles is not a bad miniseries. It's that was a big deal. What, 79?
79, I think 80, actually.
80? That was a really, really big deal.
Like I remember that being huge.
Yeah.
Now, I know Bradbury hated it.
Well...
And I know it is boring, but...
I mean, Harlan Ellison probably hated it too, and he had nothing to do with it.
I love it.
I think it's good, and it's a really good cast. Who's the other dude that's in it?
Well, it's Rock Hudson.
But there's another dude that's kind of the last thing I think I saw him in was he's a character actor, but he was in he actually had a small role in Zero Dark Thirty.
Oh.
And it was one of those times where, like, someone just – like, remember that time I told you that, you know, it was the Michael Mann tobacco movie with Pacino and Russell – The Insider or whatever. And you're all of a sudden you're in a boardroom with a bunch of lawyers and you go, oh, look, it's D-Day from Animal House. And you go, oh, wait, is that Gary Sandy? like where the hell has he been for 30 years?
Yeah.
It was – one of those moments in Zero Dark Thirty, and the dude is one of the astronauts that thinks they're back home, thinks they're back in their small town kind of thing.
Oh, isn't like Nick? Is that Nicholas Hammond's in that?
I thought
too?
Nicholas Hammond might be one of those.
He was one of those astronauts. Yeah, like for those that don't know, the Martian Chronicles is not a. It's a series of short stories about Mars,
right?
And the miniseries tries to kind of interweave those stories with mixed success. But I love the look of it, the tone, the attempt. And it's got so many different character actors in it. Like Bernadette Peters has a bit.
God, I don't remember that.
Oh yeah, it's a funny bit too, where when everybody goes home to Earth,
right?
And in the book, it's she's not as pretty as Bernadette Peters, but basically this guy gets a radio message saying this, you know, this woman's on the other side of Mars, and he flies to meet her because they're the only two people left on Mars. And she's so demanding and needy that he flies back.
That was Darren McGavin, right?
No, no. Darren McGavin's the one who opens the
Western
restaurant. Right. Yeah.
Who's the dude that goes to see Bernadette Peters?
I can't remember.
Is it Marjo?
I won't rule that out, but I
when in doubt, just go with Marjo.
Yeah, Marjo Gardner, sure.
Marjo Gardner. Okay, now that's a great one. I would not have pulled that one out.
That's just one of my favorites.
What do you got next?
I would say Benjamin Franklin Fisher, The Legend of Hell House.
Oh yeah,
I love it's a rich. I think it's a Richard Matheson story.
Yes,
and
that's a good horror movie. Man.
He plays a psychic brought into a haunted house.
That's right.
And one of my favorite parts is he stands up to the ghost at the end and calls him a son of a whore.
Oh
yeah,
I gotta get that back into the vernacular.
Yeah, and I also like the way McDowell looks in the movie. He looks kind of like he looks cool, and I think
he kind of has longer hair.
He's got kind of like, longer hair and sideburns, yeah. And a set of glasses, and you know,
he kind of looks like
a turtleneck.
He was in, I believe, one of the first, if not the first, episodes of Night Gallery.
Oh, definitely was. I'm sure he was. Yeah,
and it was, but I think it was like that first episode. It was like, you know, there were like two stories, or sometimes three stories in each one, and he looked kind of like that. He had like slightly longer hair, but just, you know, like an ascot or a scarf or something, you know, that kind of thing. Early 70s. That's a great horror movie. That's like kind of like
I watch that about once every 5 years. I like that movie a lot.
You know the one? What's the other one? You know, The Haunting. You ever see the original Haunting?
Oh sure, yeah.
Great movie. It's like one of those, like, it's not really graphic. It's not scary. Just a nice moody horror movie.
Now,
good pick.
Yeah, no, that's one of my faves. And the next one, I'm sure you, this is just me, but I love this so much. The Devil. He plays the devil on Fantasy Island more than five times, but Mr.
Really?
Rourke always bests him. And I'll never forget it because...
So he was a recurring character.
Well, Mr. Rourke was such a badass that, he, you know, the devil and him knew each other, right?
Oh, of course,
and,
yeah.
You know, he was botany obsessed, I think, in one episode. He wanted a rose, and he was trying to get Mr. Rourke's niece, Wendy Schall, from American Dad, was Mr. Rourke's niece in a season.
Mr. Rourke had a niece?
Yeah, Wendy Schall.
What?
Because you would think Ricardo Montalban's niece would be
a white girl
that looks Dutch.
Right. Maybe she was his adopted niece.
Could be. But Rourke always got the best.
I didn't think he had family of any kind.
I'll never forget. I hadn't watched it since I was a kid, and I'll never forget that I was nursing a kid at like 3 a.m. and Fantasy Island was on, and McDowell is angry, you know, he's like, Rourke, I'll get you. And it cuts to Rourke's face, and I remember saying, if he's got a pair of horns on his head at the next cut, I am going to scream. And of course, he has the worst dollar store horns on his head.
Was it like Gil Gerard in that one about the minutes?
No, those looked great compared. I think the guy on Buck Rogers actually worked on Star Trek.
By the way, have you yet to see The Nice Guys, the movie I keep raving about?
I saw half of it and fell asleep.
Did you notice Gil Gerard?
No, I'll have to rewatch it. Now it's spoiled.
He's in it. He's the guy from the big Detroit car company that comes to town for the car show.
Oh, it's wonderful to see him act again.
But let's go back a bit if we can, we do sometimes on the show. We jump around. So let's say Apes is the gateway and kind of, you know, I mean, if you probably go back to a lot of stuff that we loved as kids, or if we sort of, you know, developed, you know, some kind of a man crush, you know, for lack of a better term, on someone that we kind of like, like I said, like Sam Jones. I mean, you know, didn't do much after Flash Gordon. It took a couple of years, but then it was like, oh, that show. Well, I'm going to watch that every week. Or, you know, Dirk Benedict. You know, after Galactica, like, what's he doing? Oh, Underground Aces. Oh, I better go see that movie. You know, what do you think it was about Roddy McDowall, who was a character actor essentially, he was leading man as a kid, but then was supporting in most things he did, if not nearly all things he did. This is not a big hunky heroic, you know, guy that the kids would want to, you know, emulate. This wasn't Han Solo. But what was it about Roddy McDowall that you think was so appealing to us as kids that we wanted to pay attention to what he was doing?
You know, I think one of the things that you gravitate towards is, one, he had a very distinct voice.
Yes, I agree.
And two, he was Caesar and Cornelius. And they were badasses, those characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so everything else, you know, I equated that guy with fun. And
I think that you hit something there. The voice,
yeah,
it was very distinctive, but it was very appealing. And he had this way of sort of being exasperated and then kind of tender at the same time. Like, you look at the Apes movies, he's all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, he can go
batshit crazy.
Batshit crazy, yeah.
I think I was like 10 or 11. I saw him on Batman as the bookworm.
Right.
And the bookworm looks ridiculous.
Right.
And there's a scene in an episode where they say, I think, to him, you know, why don't you ever write a book, bookworm? And he has a meltdown because he has no originality.
Right.
And it's wonderful. You know, he could turn on that kind of insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, that Columbo where he gets caught in the cable car there and has a meltdown. He was good at that.
Well, there was an. Do you remember the one? God, speaking of Buck Rogers, he was in an episode of Buck
Planet
Rogers
of the Slave Girls,
and he's got that horrible soul patch or goatee or something. He's like a spoiled brat son of a dignitary or something.
I just remember it's not. I think I even remember somebody like David Gerald or in Starlog complaining about the fact that they're making an episode called Planet of the Slave Girls. You know,
that sounds like such a David Gerald.
Yeah, like, you know, you're reading Starlog and most of it's going over your head, and then you're like, oh, I get what that's saying, you know.
Right. But no, when you think about it, like, I mean, look at that. You know, it's like, you know, that was a big show. Like, Buck Rogers was a big budgeted show.
Sure.
Big show.
He was also on two Wonder Womans at the same year.
So for a guy like Roddy McDowall to be doing a show like Amazing Journey or Fantastic Journey or whatever, you know, it wasn't like he was slumming it. You know, he might have done a lot of stuff, but he was always working, and he didn't, you know, he was an asset to whatever he did choose to do.
Yeah.
But I never felt like he was, you know, really slumming it like, you know, like George Lazenby had to, you know, after blowing it, you know, in the early 70s and the stuff he had to take and everything.
He was a working actor.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There was no, you know, there's some actors who can just pull that off. Vincent Price was very good at that.
Yeah. And
Boris Karloff was amazing at that. Speaking of which, Karloff and McDowell did a version of Heart of Darkness. Did you know that on television? I think.
You know, I think I did know that, but I don't think I've ever seen it.
I've seen clips of it on Biography, A&E Biography.
Oh, wow. I'd love to have that.
Yeah.
Because I read the novella way back.
Yeah, I think that was...
Well, you know, Orson Welles wanted to do it, too.
No kidding.
No, yeah. He had you know, models made of the sets and what he was going to do, and I think he ended up... I think the Mercury Theater ended up doing a version of it. You know, and he was Kurt. I forget though, but it's extensive in the there's a documentary about Citizen Kane and the battle for Citizen Kane, basically with the way he went up against Hearst and such. And he was going to do that first, I think, before Citizen Kane came up as an idea. He was going to do Hearts of Darkness or Heart of Darkness. Hearts of Darkness is the documentary about Apocalypse Now. But there's some really cool shots of him, like, with a beard, black and white shots of him with a beard and looking at the the model sets, the miniature sets, showing what this thing was going to look like and everything. So he got pretty far with that. But McDowell, so already we've got a few titles that are going around here. The guy was in everything. See, you're bringing up things. I've got my list of 7 or 8 that off the top of my head I go, wow. And now you've just mentioned Fantasy Island, and which I'm sure if you put a gun to my head and said, do you think he was ever on the show? And I said, yeah, probably. Maybe he did a Love Boat too. I mean, everybody did. But I forgot about Martian Chronicles, and there was another one you just mentioned, right? We said Buck Rogers. Well, you know what else he did? Well, can I jump around too?
Oh,
can
yeah.
I jump this? Okay. Because I think of Apes, obviously, and then it became, well, there he is again. Oh, pay attention. And there was just something kind of appealing. I mean, I don't remember him playing a lot of villains, but he either played an ineffectual sort of good guy or the guy that was a little more ambiguous, like what his sort of intentions were and everything.
Actually, and he would do Villain of the Week. He was especially Villain of the Week on crime shows. And
well, he was in Poseidon Adventure.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was one of those movies that, as a kid, you know, I was into it. I wanted to see it, but it always kind of, you know, made me sad at certain points, especially what happened to Shelley Winters. Not this woman. You know, yes. certain
forever things, in a day since I've seen that.
Certain things that happen in it, spoilers, are kind of sad. And not a lot of people make it out of that thing, you know, alive. But McDowell was in that. And then I go back to, I think, the next major thing that I can recall. I mean, I could think of flipping around and all of a sudden you go, oh, there's an episode. You know, I remember the Twilight Zone episode as a kid. When I started to understand what Twilight Zone was.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big, big episode. And I recognized that was the guy that played Cornelius. You just start putting that together.
Oh, yeah.
It's a kid.
Yeah.
But the black hole, that he was the voice of Vincent.
Yes. That forever cemented him. And, you know, it's funny. You and I were talking about this. I own a depressing amount of Roddy McDowell action figures.
Nice.
None of them look like him. You know, I mainly have Apes and...
That's about to change.
Vincent. Well, yeah, you were saying that you got a...
Well, let's go. Well, yeah, I picked something up at a show called Son of Monster Palooza this past weekend in Burbank. Monster Palooza is the big monster fest that they do every year, and Son of is an in-betweener. But let's go back a second. So let's go down the list of of action figures that have been made of Roddy McDowell characters. You got Cornelius, you got Vincent, you got Cornelius.
No, it's Galen. There's a Galen.
There's a Galen.
And it's just on a Galen card. The Amigo just economically.
All right. Yeah. So let's say there's
also there was model kits, jigglers, bendies.
But what other characters? There's another character you mentioned. I thought that was. Didn't you just mention another character that he did?
Yeah. Well, there's a Mad Hatter from Batman.
There's a Mad Hatter series. At Batman Animated, that was one of the things he did.
If they made a figure of the Pie Man from The Tick that he played.
I don't think that they did. Did they do a figure of? You just said what was the one you just said? Mad Hatter. Did they do a figure of? You just said it, Mad Hatter.
Oh, the Bookworm.
The Bookworm.
Oh, yeah, you know what? You're right. Figures Toy Company released a Bookworm figure. And yeah, you could make that into a Roddy. I bought one to make into a Roddy McDowell action figure. I was going to get him like in a makeup chair or something.
So there you go. You got Bookworm. You got Vincent. You got Cornelius, Galen, Mad Hatter, which has been made several times.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler. The Biff Bang Pow Twilight Zone figures have been so successful. I don't mean like we sold 8 million of them. I mean that people are responding so well to them. The Shatner and the Art Carney from different episodes. That you know, each time we do that, we have to go to the agent or manager of the talent or their estate, because it's not just a big blanket sort of license to do whatever you want with all these faces. So like for Comic-Con, we did a set of color figures and black and white, but there's another, you know, Shatner from Nick of Time, and then Leonard Nimoy was in an episode as well. There's an episode with George Takei. There's an episode with James Doohan has a small part. So we're trying to go for faces. And within our list of faces and, you know, actors that were in the show, the Roddy McDowall episode is in there as well. So we're trying to get that.
So you're going to do like a little jail, little zoo scene?
I'd love that.
Yeah.
I wish we could do playsets. Sorry, I've got a little frog in my throat. But I was at the show over the weekend, and I had seen this online. And I don't remember where I saw it or how I saw it, but it is a 4-inch action figure, limited posability, of Peter Vincent, of Roddy McDowall's character from Fright Night.
That's an amazing turn for him, too.
So brilliant. Yeah. It's so brilliant. And it's a really good movie. I mean, I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember it being pretty damn good. And it's one of these things that you can, you know, I don't think it's a licensed figure. It says on the card, "You're so cool, Brewster."
Yeah.
He's called the Vampire Killer. But I don't know where it sort of came from. I think it was a documentary or something, and you got this with the documentary. I forget. But it's on a card. I'm going to open him because it's so neat. But it's the only – I think it's the only figure of Roddy McDowall as, you know, looking like Roddy McDowall.
Yeah.
So that's about seven or eight characters there, I think, that became action figures.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a staple of our youth in all these genre pictures. I mean, I don't remember him doing a lot of, like, you know, Murder, She Wrote and things like that.
He did Barnaby Jones. He was in stuff like The Cat from Outer Space.
Okay, but again,
Circle of Iron, which I'm
a lot of stuff is like sort of genre.
Yeah, true enough. But he did Super Train episodes, Sweepstakes.
Super Train. Again, that's genre, though. That's
Heart to Heart.
So there's something about him that, yes, Heart to Heart.
Trapper John.
Something about him that clearly, probably because of Apes, but there's something about him that clearly resonated with that sci-fi sort of audience. The other thing he did that I loved as a kid was Tales of the Gold Monkey.
Yeah, I was going to get into that. Not only did I fall in love with I was addicted to that show, and it was, I think, mostly Caitlin O'Heaney.
Right.
Who I just, like, was hot for. But
no, he wasn't originally cast.
No,
right?
he wasn't the original Lucky Pierre. I forget who was.
It was like not Cyril Cusack, but someone. I'm going to look it up while you go through the rest of your list.
Oh, all right.
I'll have a quick peek.
Okay, I would like to bring up this because I have to bring it up every time. He was in the pilot, not the original movie, but the pilot episode of A Man Called Sloan. He played a villain by the name of Manfred Baranoff, who had an army of Westworld type androids. You might see a trend there. And he, of course, he gets killed in the middle of the episode. Spoilers.
Spoiler!
Sloan
come
has
on.
To take on the androids.
Man.
That's one of my favorites. He's also, I mentioned.
I just love how much.
Oh, he was in One Love Boat.
I love how much you love Man Called Sloan.
Yeah, and I bet you if I spent 5 minutes with Robert Conrad, I'd probably smash all my DVDs and walk away.
Oh, wait, I'm...
Here we go. He had a turn in the 80s on Quantum Leap in an episode called A Leap for Lisa. Sam jumps into Al when he's younger. Al, of course, being Dean Stockwell, his guide on the show. And it causes a disruption in time. And until Sam can fix the problem, Al's been replaced by Roddy McDowall's character, Edward St. John V, who is the exact opposite of Dean Stockwell's, you know, kind of loosey-goosey. I don't know if you were a fan of the show.
Which one? Quantum Leap? You know, I watched it for like the first, because you just said loosey and you threw me there, loosey-goosey.
Ah.
I watched like the first season because I love the premise. It's a great premise.
Yeah.
I just never really kept up with it, but I think it's clearly a beloved show at this point.
Yeah, it really was, because if you had to call Dean Stockwell an Oscar, then Roddy McDowall would have been a Felix. So it was kind of a funny little turn of events to find, you know, the least like Dean Stockwell actor they could, you know. And of course, 90s kids and you know, adults who were in Arrested Development, like myself, would remember him from Pinky and the Brain, where he played Snowball, which was the nemesis for Brain. He was a hamster.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and he was also slightly nicer to Pinky. So, you know, there was kind of a joke of he's the good guy or not.
And that was that had to be right around Batman.
Oh, anime. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
he was. I remember hearing a story once or reading a story about Bruce Timm. I think it was after McDowell died. And talking about pushing him to go to a place with this voice for the Mad Hatter. And he said that it was tough because he was such a sweet man.
Right.
And he was such a gentle soul that to really get him to go crazy with this voice, it took a bit. And then once they pushed him and got him there, it was incredible. And I forgot which episode it was, but they said they were just, you know.
I don't think the Mad Hatter appeared a great deal.
He didn't. Yeah. He didn't. But it was perfect. I mean, it was perfect sort of casting. Like if you could put the net out and go, who should be this voice? He'd be on the top of your list.
Oh, for sure. Especially the way the character looks and
yeah, totally, totally.
And
What else you got? What's another?
The first film I ever rented, thank you, Starlog, was a Charles Band production called Laser Blast, which is
I remember Laser Blast.
Some amazing Dave Allen animation at the start of some aliens. Yeah, it's famous for Mystery Science Theater and.
No, it's famous for Starlog. You're right, yeah. Because I looked at that image. There's two aliens, and they're holding, like, what looks like a gun from, like, the
CW. And they're amazing. They look cool.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing that article and waiting and waiting and waiting for that movie to come out. Did it ever come out?
Well, it did. It did hit theaters in 78, but, I mean, I don't think you and I would have got it in our markets, or at least, you know, especially where I live, we had one movie theater. It hit the, you know, I think it was 1981 or 1982, and I had enough money to, you know, it was my birthday, and my parents rented me a VCR and said, pick two movies. And I picked Laser Blast and Stripes. And I like Stripes a lot better. But, you know, just to show you, like, this was a cheap movie. It is. They show the space scenes are at the start, and then it's all just a kid in a van who finds a laser gun, and he gets tormented by a bat. You know, I don't know, Eddie Deason's in it, and basically he ends up turning into like a monster and killing everybody. And one of the people he kills is Roddy McDowell, who's a doctor trying to figure out, you know, what's happened to him. And it was probably a day for him, but he really classies up the movie a little bit, you know, and it just goes to show you, he just wasn't afraid to take work.
Well, and he also never, you know, you say that classied it up, like he never, you know, we in our sort of era, in our childhoods, our lives, I mean, method was still a big deal. We came from the era of, you know, Dustin Hoffman and De Niro and these guys that incorporated their roles and they, you know, never turned it off, etc. And the generation just before that and what bled into our childhoods and, you know, teenage years and stuff were these guys that were, you know, utility actors that hit their mark, did it, went home, and you're done. And, you know, every now and then guys like, you know, like Connery, you know, once he finished Bond, tried to do some very edgy stuff like the offense and things like that, that people stayed away from. They didn't really want to see that. They wanted to see him as a certain thing. McDowell, you know, he never really had to change his voice. He was always kind of Roddy McDowell. Right. Although in Tales of the Gold Monkey, he did he not do like a French?
Oh, yeah, he was French, yeah.
Yeah, he did that, but
That was unusual for him.
Right, yeah. Right. And when we didn't care. It didn't make a difference. It was Roddy McDowell, and he was wonderful. I mean, he had his little tics that were sort of tells that you go, oh, here he's going to go down that road. Oh, you know, the exasperate. Oh, he'd always do that and kind of roll his eyes. And, oh, well, you know. He was never camp, but he was always on the fence of camp. Not camp, well, but just...
I'll tell you a camp one he did, and this is one that I'm a fan of. Have you ever heard of the Destroyer books?
Is that...
Yeah.
That's not the Lee Marvin...
No, the Destroyer books are these books I kind of fell in love with as a teenager, and now I read them with, like, oh, God. Basically, and a lot of movies have stolen from this premise, but basically what it's about is a cop is framed for murder. He's executed. He wakes up with a new face, and he works for a government organization called CURE.
Mm-hmm.
And CURE hires the creator, the master of Shinanju, and Shinanju is where all other martial arts come. It's a Korean martial art. It basically makes you a Superman. It's taught from one pupil to one master to one pupil, and you become the ultimate assassin. And they've paid this master of Shinanju in gold to train Remo to be the ultimate assassin. And they did the movie in 85 with Fred Ward.
Yeah. And, okay, that's how I know the name of that.
Okay. And they had Joel Grey with a ton of makeup playing Chun.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to do a TV series. And, you know, who...
Oh, that's right!
Roddy McDowall is Chun. And...
Oh my God! Was it a pilot, or did it go?
It's a pilot, and I've
seen it.
I finally found it. I mean, I've looked for it for years, and then some kind soul put it on YouTube, and it's just like, oh,
who plays Remo? Who's Remo?
Some guy. Yeah, some guy. They went. I remember the creator of the Destroyer books hated him because he was just too hippy dippy. You know that, but you got to understand. Like, this is a real. This guy's writing these kind of very, they're very right wing, these books, you know.
Well, I was just going to say, the movie was 85. When was the pilot? How many 88. Years late? 88. And we still think it's okay to get a white dude to come in and play Chu.
Because, you know, there's absolutely no Asian actors available.
Right. No, they must have been away at the time.
Yeah. You know, because like brilliant. James Hong, just nope.
That's brilliant. I forgot about that. Yeah. Nice one.
Yeah, that one.
All right. So, have we forgotten? How about some of the? Is there anything that I'm thinking that might not be on your list that I should throw in that's more mainstream? But besides all the television that he did, the copious amounts of television, Tales of the Gold Monkey. You know what else he did? I think one of the last things he did was he was a voice in the movie A Bug's Life, the Pixar movie.
That's right.
Which was a big deal because I remember seeing, you know, I do voiceover and how much I love, you know, that whole scene. For to read that he was going to be in a Pixar movie, you'd think, you know, if he were alive, I think he would end up have been one of these staples, like a John Ratzenberger that Pixar keeps going back.
Yeah, and the other guy who got a bit of vindication at the end of his career for that was Jonathan Harris. He was also in A Bug's
Life. That's right, yeah.
It was like nice to hear Jonathan Harris, you know?
Yeah, that's right. That's when you know it's being done by...
Someone who cares.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I was just, I don't know, you know, I was in a bit of a mood the other day and I decided I need something to make me laugh, pop something on. I put on, you know, Toast of London.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, Stephen. It's Clem Fandango. Can you hear me? Yes, I can hear you, Clem Fandango. And God almighty, every episode, you know, Louise Jameson, Paul Darrow, Jeffrey Perkins. I mean, it's just a love letter to all the stuff that he grew up with and loved. And he is in a position to stick them all in his show. Although, it's fantastic.
I got to admit, it was funny that my wife was very smitten with Dr. Jekyll in the last season of Penny Dreadful. She's like, oh, he's really handsome. And then I sat there going, you like Clem Fandango.
Yes, I can hear you,
Clem. And she, you know, looked at me like I just said Purple Monkey Dishwasher because she doesn't know who that is.
That is one of the best because I just picked up, Midnight Run just hit Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah.
And it is one of my top 10 films of all time. Like, it just...
Would you be angry with me that the first time I saw it was, like, 6 months ago?
No, long as you appreciated it and want to watch it again, because I could literally watch that movie once a month.
I can see the appeal in it.
And it would never get old to me. It's just, to me, the script just gets better and better and tighter every time I see it. It's so... It's like a Swiss watch, that script and the stuff that's in there. I will say this, however, the Blu-ray transfer, one of the worst transfers I've ever seen. Like, my old DVD, Universal DVD copy, is better than this Blu-ray.
You know what? Getting way off topic, I got totally screwed on a Blu-ray purchase recently. I bought a film by...
Which one?
It's a Jim Wynorski film called The Lost Empire. And it's pure schlock, as if, you know, it's like a cheesy adventure like Enter the Dragon if Russ Meyer directed it. So
okay,
and I love it.
Like karate and lots of boobies.
Yes, and you know, evil scientists and laser guns and I bought the Blu-ray thinking it would be better than the DVD. And I got it home, and I popped it on, and I knew I was in trouble when no menu came. The movie just came on.
Right.
And I'm like, uh-oh. And then I read a review on Amazon. It's like, don't get this. Get the DVD. It has commentary, and it's like I needed this to be perfect, you know?
That's the sad thing is this this Blu-ray, this Midnight Run, there's a lot of great extras. There's interviews.
Yeah.
And the single worst extra DVD interview extra that I've ever seen on any DVD ever. It's about a 3-minute interview with Robert De Niro that is so awful.
Yeah.
The voiceover, the questions being asked.
Know what? I've never actually enjoyed many interviews with him. So
well, no, it's true. But I mean, if you were going to sit him down, there were certain questions you'd want to ask about this script and how it. Why the hell did I start talking about Midnight Run?
Fandango. What are we talking about?
The names, some of the names in Midnight Run, you know, Jonathan Mardukas, you know, Alonzo Mosley, are some of the greatest names. And Clem Fandango is one of the greatest names. It's like you want to use it as an alias if you go to some party with put a sticker on your jacket and say,
see, Clem. Who knows, you know?
It's fantastic.
I wanted to just talk about weird places McDowell popped up.
Yes.
In movies. I remember this from being a kid. He is in a Peter Fonda movie called Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry.
Yeah,
He is a supermarket manager. They extort money from at the start. And I remember just being a kid going, and then he's gone. He's not in the rest of the film. And it's like, that struck me as so weird that he's in a 2-minute scene. But, you know, again, work is work, I guess. The other thing I wanted to talk about is he got in a lot of trouble, and I think he even got arrested for this. He collected film.
Yes,
he was one of the very first people to collect movies and take care of them. He loved them.
Now tell me again, though. He got in trouble. Something happened where suddenly they came knocking or something. He was like, "Dude, I've been collecting this stuff forever." But the studios started to come.
Well, there was a debate over ownership, if I recall.
Right.
Like, you know, basically, he got raided in 1974. I'm just reading it on Wikipedia. I'm not a savant. Because he had a collection of films and television series, and it was an investigation into film and copyright infringement. He had 160 16mm prints and more than 1,000 video cassettes, which is not. I'd be in prison forever.
Right.
There was no legal aftermarket at this time. So what had happened is he had bought, and this is probably why he kept working so much, is he was a collector. And, you know, he had bought Errol Flynn's home films and prints of his films. And he transferred them to tape. Oh, I see. And
that's what
no
was
charges
trading?
Were filed against him because he wasn't really doing anything wrong.
Right. It was that fine line.
Yeah. Very, very interesting stuff.
Okay, so what? Give me another one from your list here of McDowell's his oeuvre.
His oeuvre. Well, I'm trying to go through a few here. He did a film in 1967 that is a remake of The Golem called It. Have you seen it?
Wait, what year?
1967. And the thing that makes me laugh about It is, I guess Psycho was a big hit at the time, so Marty McDowell also has a dead mother in a rocking chair, like he's talking to a skeleton at one point in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's so tacked on and silly that it's kind of funny. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't... It's very clearly inspired by Psycho.
Yeah, I'll say.
Yeah.
Dead mother and effeminate sort of son. Yeah, a bit. Give me another one. What? Sorry.
You've almost exhausted the things I know. I mean, I don't really have much of a recollection of Love American Styles.
Love American Styles.
Or Policewoman.
Well, I think in terms of, okay, so one of the last things he did was A Bug's Life. He was on Batman and the animated series. The Fright Night, did he do the sequel too?
He did do the sequel.
He did. Fright Night's a good movie, man.
Did you ever see the remake? Yeah, I saw the remake.
The remake's not bad.
You know, that came in that slew of 80s remakes, which I think mostly had Colin Farrell. Like RoboCop and Total Recall and Fright Night.
Mostly had Colin Farrell, you're right.
And none of them bothered me. But none of them made anything like, I didn't sit there and go, yeah, I just was like, oh yeah, that happened.
Well, you know, it's sad because remakes are inevitable. I mean, they were, you know, multi-spawned.
I'm not particularly, as everybody knows, I'm not offended by them.
No, it's not that, but it's always, it's that, to me, it's of two minds. It's either, it is something that when you hear it's going to get remade, you go, oh, you know what? I'm digging on that, because now with today's budget and effects and so on, let's see, they could really do something that they couldn't do with, you know, whatever. It's like, when Doctor Who came back, it was like, oh, wow, that's all this thing ever really needed was the budget to appeal to. I mean, the storytelling was always there, etc. And then there are things that sort of shouldn't be touched. Like, you just go, why would you want to? And Fright Night is one of those things that, like, it's such a tight little movie of a certain time, but it is a cut above most of what came out in that decade as a genre thing or a horror thing. And when it goes dark and scary, it's pretty scary. You know, there's some very violent stuff in there, and this vampire is pure evil, but McDowell is genius in it. I think it's one of the best things he ever did.
Well, it's a great turn, and you know, I can understand wanting to take that story and retell it in more modern era. I think the movie still works, but that's the one thing you know you can't get back, and they were wise not to do it. First of all, there are no horror hosts anymore.
Right.
Kids couldn't probably relate to the, you know, I think McDowell's basically playing Peter Cushing in the film. And kids, you know, kids in the 80s could relate to that, but I don't think kids today could. So I did think that making David Tennant more of a Chris Angel mind freak was probably clever to make it, you know, appeal to the youth of today. And like I said, I didn't hate it. It was okay as it went.
But he runs the gamut. He is a washed up has-been that gets, you know, pouty with the show.
Oh, steals the show in the movie.
And then he goes from that to being a money grabber because they want to convince this kid, their friend, that there's nothing going on. Then he gets freaking pants-wettingly terrified of what he's discovering. Then he becomes a coward to run away, and then he finds his heroic nature. I mean, it really goes all over the place.
It's his movie.
Oh, my God. It's so his movie, and he's fantastic. Now, I don't remember the sequel. I think the sequel was a female vampire or something?
Yeah, I don't remember it either. And there was even a comic series. Do you remember, like, Now Comics did a series about Charlie and Peter Vincent? Yeah.
No, I didn't.
I bought a couple issues of that. It was pretty good. Oh, no. I mean, it was a good idea to license those two characters going around, you know, fighting mummies. I don't remember any of the issues, but I remember reading them at the time and thinking,
what happened to the kid?
Brewster? Like, the actor?
The actor, because the other kid got into porn, right?
I got his autograph just before he did that.
Sure you did.
Brewster was the star of Herman's Head.
Herman's Head, of course, who would also starred Lisa Simpson.
Yes, and Apu. What's her name?
And who?
Well, Hank Azaria and Yeardley Smith. There was two Simpsons cast members on.
Oh, Hank was in that too?
Yeah.
I like Azaria. Seems like a nice guy.
He played his lecherous buddy Jake, I think.
I don't remember the show at all.
Ragsdale also did a... This, we're now doing...
Is that what he's called? Ragsdale?
William Ragsdale, yeah.
kid who played Brewster?
Yeah, he was also in. He's gotten around quite a bit himself, but I remember he did a movie where it was Frankenstein: The College Years.
Right.
Yeah, they bring Frankenstein's monster to.
What is weird about that when you watch Fright Night is that, I mean, they're supposed to be what? Are they high school kids?
Yeah,
kind of. Because he looks like he's about 40.
Bruce, well, you ever watch like a Porky's sequel? They've all got receding hairlines, and they're getting their midterms.
He looks like their dads. He just doesn't.
Every 80s We Gotta Get Laid movie looks terrible. Like when you watch it now, like
which one?
Every 80s We Gotta Get Laid movie.
Right.
The guys are 48 years old.
Right. Right. Well, I've always said that about American Graffiti too. Like,
yeah, they
this
yeah.
is not a cast that looked like they were leaving high school. You know,
no, there's not a lot of pimples on those faces.
No, it was Dreyfuss and Ron Howard. Like, you know, they looked like they were pushing 30 already. You know, but Brewster looks like the dad.
Speaking of pushing 30, and I just wanted to get on this. I caught the last 20 minutes of A View to a Kill.
Oh yeah,
and yeah.
Which also has the best, I'll never forget, like, they're in the Zeppelin, and she goes, "What a view," and he goes, "To a kill." I would have elbowed him in the throat for saying such a stupid...
Oh, yeah, well, you got to drink when they say the title of the thing.
It's one of the worst lines, but, and the worst is, remember when that shot when Roger Moore jumps into bed with her, and he goes to bed with Grace Jones?
No, I didn't see that part.
Oh,
but I just, there were so many scenes of him falling and he's going, oh, and you're like, oh, I think he broke a hip. Like, he's just way too old at that
point. Well, he's on the, there's a whole chase with the fire truck.
Oh, he
it is like a Marx Brothers movie all of a sudden.
Yeah. Well, there's also a few scenes where it, you know, every time Bond has to do anything physical, it pans out to this, you know, like they're three blocks away.
Well, the other thing too that's sad about that, you know, God bless Roger Moore. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be mean here, but I mean, he just, by the time you got to Octopussy,
yeah, he's 55.
But in a different, like, you look at, you know, so was Connery when he did what do you call it? Never Say Never,
yeah.
And he looks 10 years younger. Moore just didn't age that well. I don't know if it was being in the sun too much, yeah, or what?
He looks like he's a man in his 50s. I don't really have a problem with it. It's just that.
Well, no, but I. Well, you see, then that's the thing. I don't have a problem with the age. I have a problem with him. He looked like he was about 65.
Yeah.
And they put this black eyeliner on him in View to a Kill to try to. I don't know if they were trying to downplay it or what.
And a members only jacket. That's my favorite.
And the members only jacket. Yeah. But it also, you know, they're running, you know, like they're sitting around going, God, we've gone to every location in the world. Where haven't we gone? San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know they're running out of ideas.
The other thing I noticed is like the gold, like the ends with the bridge, and it's like they just did this whole thing in San Francisco. But whatever.
Awful film. Terrible film.
Well, I want to get back to Roddy McDowall
before we
close out, but one of my favorites he did is a film filmed in Toronto called Class of 84. We did a whole piece on it. Our first and only minisode. Sorry.
Hey, we're testing it out.
He plays an exasperated pick.
We haven't got the market research data back yet.
Yeah, we're going to get better. He played an exasperated teacher who unfortunately bites the big one at the end.
God, spoilers!
He's also in, and I mentioned this earlier, but I kind of got sidetracked. He's in a weird movie with David Carradine called Circle of Iron. Have you seen this? I watched it recently.
Mm.
Christopher Lee, David Carradine.
Is that the one? Is that the karate one?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a karate fantasy.
No, but it's the one. Who's the lead of it, though?
David Carradine.
I thought there was another dude.
Oh, you know the one I'm talking about?
It's like a monkey. It's like a monkey tail thing, and
that's it. Jeff Cooper plays.
Jeff Cooper.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah, and
insane.
It is insane. And apparently, Bruce Lee wrote it, but of course,
yes,
died
that's
before
right.
it got made.
That's right.
And it's a weird film, but yeah, it's, Christopher Lee and Roddy McDowall both play like old wise men in the film, you know. And
yes, I actually came across it a couple years ago, flipping around. It was on like, you know, You know what? I think it might have been on El Rey Network or something. And when you click on it and then you can get the description in the entry.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I don't think I've ever heard of this. I mean, and then I realized when I saw the poster online that, yes, it was familiar, but that it originally came from a concept by Bruce Lee.
Yes.
Yeah, it's insane. It's completely
that's
insane.
That just goes to show you like the insane myriad of different items that there are different roles Roddy McDowell played throughout his career. I mean, he's just absolutely all over the place. He's in Bedknobs and Broomsticks. He's in episodes of Medical Center. You know,
I didn't know he was in Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Yeah, apparently he plays Mr. Jelk.
You know what? Now that you're doing it, I'm gonna just, because we never do this on this show. We never, jump online only if we really need to sort of confirm something. But we don't ever jump online to nudge ourselves. But I don't want to miss anything here.
Sometimes I jump online to make sure I'm not wrong.
Sometimes you jump online to because you're so bored with me and talking to me.
I'm also, doing some instant messaging about how much I don't like you.
Right, and yeah. You start shopping.
Oh my God, yeah.
Let's see here. All right, let's just go. I'm just going to zip down here real quick to let's just do some of the '70s stuff here. I forgot about that Remo Williams thing. So the black hole.
Yeah, everybody, go to YouTube and type in Remo William Pilot. don't do it at work. And
God, no.
You know, and understand that this was a different time.
Speaking of a different time, I'm looking at IMDb right now. He was on an episode of Mork and Mindy. He played Chuck the Robot in Dr. Morkenstein. He was a robot voice.
That sounds like one of the more serious Mork and Mindys.
He also was in, I forgot this, The Return of the King, the Rankin Bass Return of the King. You know how Rankin Bass had the hop?
I remember that special.
And he played Samwise.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at that. I think Orson Bean was Samwise in the original, right?
He was in Charlie Chan and the Curse of the Dragon Queen.
That sounds...
Thank God he didn't
play Charlie... What did he have against...
Thank God... No, but wait, he didn't play Charlie Chan. Oh. Who did play Charlie Chan? It was Ustinov. Oh my God.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Peter Ustinov and Angie Dickinson, and it was one of Michelle Pfeiffer's first movies, if not
Peter
the first.
Ustinov, of course.
You just... when you were done here, look... Look up the movie poster for Charlie Chan and the Curse of the Dragon Queen.
I remember the video box.
Oh my God. It'll make your stomach turn. Oh my God. This is what I was going to say, and I totally forgot. Evil Under the Sun. Evil Under the Sun is Peter Ustinov again, but playing Poirot. Hercule Poirot. And
it was Christie.
Agatha Christie. I think it was directed by Guy Hamilton, who did some of the Bonds. And it is Roddy McDowell, Maggie Smith, Peter Ustinov, Diana Rigg. James Mason has a part in it as well, Smushing Peas. He's in it. It's a really good Agatha Christie. But it's one of those movies that's just like you couldn't get a cast like this. I always say this about A Bridge Too Far, the World War II movie, Bridge Too Far. If you go down the list of people in that movie.
The Hackman Sean and Michael Caine film, right?
Michael Caine, Sean Connery, Dirk Bogarde, Gene Hackman, Elliot Gould, Ryan O'Neill, James Caan, Laurence Olivier. I mean, I don't know where you'd begin to assemble a cast even close to those people in a movie today. But this one, Peter Ustinov,
Jane Burke. Have you seen The Ridiculous Six, sir?
The Ridiculous Six? I know what you're talking about. No.
I beg to differ.
Jane Birkin was in it, Peter Ustinov, Nicholas Clay, who played Lancelot in Excalibur and who passed away. He was a brilliant actor. Maggie Smith, Roddy McDowell, Sylvia Miles, James Mason, Dennis Quilly, Diana Rigg. You know, great, great cast, great movie. He's in that, and he's playing a gay character, but they can't quite come out and say it. They don't quite go there with it. Yes, Fantasy Island. He repeated several times here as the devil. Tales of the Gold Monkey, The Zany Adventures of Robin Hood. Do you remember that TV movie? Because I think Tom Baker was in that. Do you remember that?
God, no. Was that around the same time that Tom Baker played Anatole Blaylock on Remington Steele?
I can't believe. you remember the character's name.
I think we've done this before, but yeah, I never forgot that.
I was part of the North American Doctor Who Appreciation Society.
I was part of the Doctor Who Information Network. We didn't like you Nadwas people.
We got laid all the time.
Oh, that Dwin badge.
Tom Baker, yes, Sir Guy de Gisborne.
You know what? That's the only reason I remember that is, and it was back in the day. If you missed it, but yeah, I remember somebody saying they saw it, and I was jealous. And it's
yes, it was 1984. George Segal played Robin Hood.
Oh,
Morgan Fairchild was Lady Mary.
Oh, Bonnie McDowell.
Bonnie McDowell was Prince John, and Tom Baker. And I remember going, "Oh my God!" Like, I remember thinking when that would happen, it would be like, I can't believe the rest of the world is going to see Tom Baker in something because I've been keeping him secret for so long. No one knows who the hell he is. Let's see here. Bridges Across, George Burns, Comedy Week, The Wizard. He was in the – remember the Wizard TV
show? I liked the Wizard TV show. That was David Rappaport, right?
Yeah, he killed himself.
Yeah, sadly.
A lot of little people kill themselves.
I don't know.
Let it go.
Yeah.
He was in Around the World in 80 Days, the miniseries from 89, which was with, I think, Eric Idle and Pierce Brosnan in 89. He was in that. I remember that. He was in then he started to get into a lot of voice work. Pirates of Dark Water.
Camp Candy.
Well, that was the John Candy animated series.
I know what it was. Even I didn't watch it.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Let's see, Quantum Leap, Darkwing Duck, Sands of Time, Beep Beep Ba, Dream On.
I remember him on Dream On, believe it or not.
And then it becomes a lot of, a lot of guest bits. But he was, and The Tick, yeah, I forgot, he was the breadmaster in The Tick.
Yeah, and he did, I always liked his villain was, his sidekick was named Buttery Pat.
That was a great show. I swear, I can't even imagine, had I been, it's showing up at an audition and there's Roddy McDowell for a voice or something, I would have fainted.
You know what I really liked about The Tick was there were so many adult jokes on it.
Oh God.
Like there was a character that was basically supposed to be Shaft and I can't remember his name.
Yes. But he kept showing up.
Every time he spoke, there would be like, that kind of shut your mouth thing going on in the back. Like there was backup singers. And I would laugh out loud and my girlfriend,
like,
at the
no
time
kid would get that.
Even my girlfriend didn't get it. And it was like, he's Shaft. And it's like, but it wasn't, it was like, what, the mid 90s, and Shaft hadn't had much of a renaissance at the time.
Right, with the kids.
Yeah.
Now, wait a second. I'm looking at Tales of the Gold Monkey Part 1. I swear he wasn't in the.
He's not in the pilot.
Ron Moody. It was Ron Moody.
Yeah.
That's who played Bonchance Louis.
My God,
Ron Moody had a great face.
He was even in Two Stupid Dogs.
I like Two Stupid Dogs. So there you go. And now you said something else. Hold on, you said I was going to look something else up while I had this here.
Oh, one of the things I did want to bring up, and I wish I could find it now, but it was a friend of mine named Dan on Facebook. He's always, putting up. He's a cinephile and he is a big fan of McDowell and other classic actors and he posted something the other day and it was a quote from McDowell and let me just, if you don't mind, I am going to try and find it because it was like, you got to be kidding me that he said this, because if I didn't like him enough, this was like, okay, now I adored him.
Oh my God, he was in Rabbit Test.
Here it is. I enjoyed being in movies when I was a boy. As a child... Oh no, that's not it. I absolutely adore movies. Even bad ones. I don't like pretentious ones. But a good bad movie, you must admit, is great.
Oh wow.
And I love that because, who doesn't... Like, if something like Starship Troopers or Battlefield Earth comes on TV, it's event television for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's crap, but it's fun crap. And
it is. But and to his credit, as I'm going through his CV here, like, there's not a lot of D-type movies here.
No.
I mean, there's, Laser Blast and whatever, but I mean, maybe, I'm not saying Class of 84 is a bad film or anything. I'm saying that it's it probably was like a day's work, in and out. Not a lot of people were going to see it, whatever. But most of what he did, you know, he didn't, you know, my God. I mean, Mickey Rourke, he had a better career than Mickey Rourke. And Mickey Rourke was supposed to be the next De Niro. Right. Like, when you look at where his career went, you know, and how bad it got, like, there's nothing like that on here for McDowell. And he was constantly working, you know. But the thing is, like, you know, it was a different time and everything, and paychecks, whatever, but it couldn't have been, it wasn't that much different. Like, you needed to work. You know, if you weren't on a series, if you didn't get on a series that was going to run for a while, I mean, you were just paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, and I think he probably had a little nest egg from his childhood. But
I would think so, yeah. And then, but I mean, you know, as far as, like you say, you know, one of his best friends, you know, Liz Taylor, you know, she could do little to nothing and make a fortune.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, so he died of lung cancer. Yeah, I think he was a big smoker. I think he smoked.
He smoked all his life. He died at 70 of lung cancer in Studio City, California. He was, again, he was also an avid photographer. Did you know that?
I did know that, yes. Here's a nice little quote here. I mean, a little thing in his little sort of bio. He was a rarity among movie stars in that he appears to have made no enemies at all during his lifetime.
Yeah.
Man with numerous friends both in and out of show business. Those who knew him continue to speak well of him to this day, and his funeral drew overflow crowds.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said that he, if anybody had the secrets, he had all the secrets and never spoke a word to anyone.
Let's end this on a bit of trivia. Do you know the Planet of the Apes movie he did not appear in?
Do I know the Planet of the Apes movie he did not appear in?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Planet of the Apes, Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
You're going to list all the ape movies?
Return to the Planet of the Apes.
That's a cartoon.
Downtown Business District of the Planet of the Apes. The one he did. Oh, yeah. It's the one the other dude played in.
Yeah.
It was the fourth one?
Second one.
Second one. No, it wasn't the second one.
Yes, it was.
Was it?
Yes.
And who was the prick that played him?
Well,
the
guy, I think he was a prick.
I'm kidding. The guy that played him actually, you know, kind of, he actually looked a bit like him too, didn't he? He was like a good-looking British kid,
you know,
right?
What I find weird about David Watson is Mego did a Planet of the Apes.
Like David Watson.
Mego did a Planet of the Apes astronaut figure that does not look like Charlton Heston.
Right.
It's just a generic dude with long sideburns. It looks like there's a documentary that shows a picture of him, one of the Apes documentaries, and that he could be the spitting image of that figure.
Well,
which
speaking
is
of
weird, but it's you
that
know.
That's the only reason I know who this dude is. Oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
He died.
Yeah, he just recently died.
The only reason I know who he was is because of that Apes documentary.
Yeah.
And the McDowell. Now, why didn't McDowell?
He was busy doing. He was busy doing something else in 1970. I think he was directing a film. He directed one film. I believe it's called The Devil's Widow. Yeah, that's. I'm right. Wow. And I've never seen The Devil's Widow, but it's a witchcraft-based film. It's also,
But he was, he was a handsome fella. He was a bit of a. You'd think he would have been a bit of a heartthrob, right?
You want to know something too? This is kind of funny.
Sure.
This is how old Ian McShane is. When
Ian McShane's got to be early 70s, right?
Ian McShane was he's the second lead in Roddy McDowell's directorial debut in 1970. You know,
oh,
God,
no,
that guy got around.
Speaking of, wait a minute. Was McDowell in The Last of Sheila, or did he? No. Anthony Perkins wrote it. But was McDowell in it? You ever see that movie?
Sheila?
It's called The Last of Sheila.
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, 1973. If you haven't seen it, it's a great little whodunit. After a year, Sheila is killed in a hit and run, her multimillionaire husband invites a group of friends to spend a week on his yacht playing a scavenger hunt style mystery game. The game turns out to be all too real and all too deadly. It's a really smart kind of a whodunit. It was written by Stephen Sondheim and Anthony Perkins. And the cast is Richard Benjamin, James Coburn, James Mason, Joan Hackett, Diane Cannon, Ian McShane, Raquel Welch. It's a great cast.
70s Raquel Welch.
Yeah, early 70s. I thought for a second that McDowell was in it, but he is not in it.
It almost I can understand why you'd think that.
Because with that lineup,
with
right?
With that lineup, it right. sounds like he missed that day.
How about we ended on a because Halloween's coming up.
All right.
So let's end on a sort of a recommendation to what people should watch for McDowell besides Legend of Hell House.
In terms of horror movies?
Is there another horror picture that we should watch of his?
Gosh. Well, Fright Night would be a terrific one and one Fright of his Night. Best.
And I think that I'm going to go with the Night Gallery because I love, you know.
Terrific. Yeah, well, actually, sorry, I was thinking Twilight Zone. And I think Gobot's Battle of the Rock Lords.
I think you can't get better than that.
Nothing's more frightening than that.
Nothing is more frightening than a Gobot feature. All right, good episode, man. Fun stuff.
Well, that's terrific. Hey, everybody. Also, we've got October coming up next month, if you didn't know that. We're looking for your suggestions for Halloween-themed episodes.
Yes, please.
We'll pick the best one.
And we'll do it justice.
Sure.
Yes, please. Everyone, we always love your suggestions any time of the year, but especially Halloween because we love it more than anything. So please, keep them coming.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and I'll talk to you very soon.
Thanks, everybody.
I just said goodbye like I was saying goodbye to my grandmother.
I'm right here, man. God.